If you would, keep your Bibles marked there in that, in those verses that Terry read. We're going to come back to them at the end of the lesson this morning. And then, in the meantime, once you do that, turn to Exodus chapter 20, verses 1 through 4. So over the last year and a half, we've spent a lot of time in our Bible classes, on up here in the adult classes, talking about basically the Old Testament, from the beginning, from the creation all the way through, and we just finished what is referred to as the period of silence. And a main theme that comes to play in these, in this time frame, is idolatry. And that's what I want to talk about this morning. But I don't want to talk about graven images. I don't want to talk about a statue that you have, or a cross even, maybe hanging in your living room or your kitchen or anything like that. And I don't want to talk about idolatry as we think of it today, where we're focused on, well, you've turned money into your idol, or you've turned something material into your idol. Okay? What I want to talk about is something a little more sinister. I want to talk about changing God as we know him, as the Bible presents him, into our own image. Hence, I titled the lesson, Creating God in My Image. Now, you may say, what are you talking about? Well, I'll tell you over the next 30 or 40 minutes. I'll try not to go real long. So, starting in Exodus 20, just to lay the groundwork for this. And God, in verse 1, and God spake all these words, saying, I am the Lord thy God, which have brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image, or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them, for I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children of the third and fourth generation of them that hate me. Now I want you to turn back over to Genesis chapter 1, verses 26 and 27. And I'm going to ask you to bear with me here just for a second, because I'm going to read these, but it's not going to sound like what I just asked you to turn and read. All right. Then God said, let us make them in their image, after their likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heavens, and over the livestock, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on earth. So God created them in their image. In the image of them, he created them. He, she, him, her. Pick your pronoun. You guys confused yet? I am. See, we turn God into our idol when we decide what God is supposed to be, not what he is. These verses actually read, and God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth up on the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. We are God's creation. And as God's creation, it is our responsibility to revere him, to worship him as our creator. I have hanging in our den or basement room, whatever you want to call it, a shelf. Very simple. Two sides, two shelves, and a little back. I built those shelves my freshman year in shop class with my father. He He helped me draw out the design. We cut the boards. We put it together. We put the stain on it. We did all of those things. That was, I don't know, 40-some years ago. Those shelves still mean something to me. Those shelves are something that I created. Now, they have had a variety of different trophies on them. Some for soccer trophies for the kids, a couple of baseballs, a couple of things like that. But I created it. It's mine. I'm never getting rid of those shelves. Seeing them hanging on my wall means something to me. When God looks down on us, He sees His creation. How would I feel if somebody just came in and took those shelves and decided they were going to recreate them in their image, the way they thought they should look? But we do this every single day of our lives. Are we worshiping God the way He intended, the way we're supposed to? Thomas Watson, a Puritan preacher in the 17th century, said, "In the first commandment, worshiping God, a false God, in the first commandment, worshiping a false God is forbidden. In this, however, the second commandment, worshiping the true God in a false manner, is forbidden." A.W. Tozer wrote, "Let us beware lest we in our pride accept the erroneous notion that idolatry consists only in kneeling before visible objects of adoration, and that civilized peoples are therefore free from it. The essence of idolatry is the entertainment of thoughts about God that are unworthy of Him. It begins in the mind and may be present where no overt act of worship has taken place." In a recent WordPoints article, Gary Henry wrote, "We don't use the word idolatry much anymore, but it is still a concept that needs to be considered. To worship an idol is to worship a god that does not exist. If a person bowed down before a physical object, perhaps one that he himself had made, and called it God, he would be engaging in idolatry. But if we conceive of God in ways that are false, even if it's only in our minds, we are worshiping not God, but an idol created by our imagination, and that kind of idolatry is still very much a problem in this world." It's still a problem. See, if we've decided that this is the way God thinks and we know better, then we've changed God, and we, in essence, have made Him nothing more than the graven images that the Israelites served. Because we've decided what God is. We've decided what His will is. Not God telling us what His will is. We've decided it. Why did I put things like at the end of those verses, he, she, him, her? Because right now in our society, everybody wants to know what your pronouns are. But God didn't create that way. God created man in His image. He didn't create something for us to tell Him what His image is. He gave us His word. We have spent the last 18 months preparing for the birth of Jesus, talking about the prophecies and all these things that are supposed to come to pass. But when we relegate God to nothing more than something that we've created in our minds, we've made Him nothing more than a golden calf. We've made Him nothing more than anything else. Now, there's going to be a lot of people here who disagree with me. And I'll stand right here right now and tell you I could be wrong. I could be wrong about everything I'm about to say this morning. And if I am, feel free to tell me. But in those verses that we just read, in Romans chapter 1 there, what is God saying? God says in verse 19, For what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them. And as you drop down in the last part of verse 20, so they are without excuse. For although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him, but they became futile in their thinking, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things. Have we taken God and turned him into something that we want him to be? God's not going to punish me because God's a loving God. Yes, he is. Yes, he is. Hell's not real. God would never create something like that to punish people. Yes, he will. How do we do this? How do we do these things? First, when we're creating God as we think he should be, we minimize his existence. We turn God into something that didn't happen. Go back to Genesis 1:1. Genesis 1:1 says, in the beginning, God created. And there's a whole chapter that talks about all of the things that God created. Earth, light, dark, water, all of it. All of it God spoke into existence. And yet today, if we ask most people, they'd want to talk about evolution. God didn't create anything. A couple of planets banged together, created the earth, and somehow there were some single-celled organisms that came from that. I'm not exactly sure how, but it came from that, which eventually evolved into this, and evolved into this, and evolved into this. And we've taken science and allowed it to create and minimize God and his power. Is that not the same thing as ascribing power to an object that we made? Is it different than that? We've taken power that God has and given it to another object. Just because we don't have a remote control to praise, thank you for the rain, thank you for the weather, thank you for the food, whatever it is, just because it's not an object doesn't mean that we're not worshiping some sort of idol. We minimize God, and therefore, in doing so, we change what God is. An all-powerful, all-knowing God. And we change him into something more, nothing more than just happenstance. A couple of planets bang together. Evolution explains it all. Not really. Moses, did you know this? Did you know this? This is an important fact about Moses and his life. Moses did not part the Red Sea. No. Moses had spent 40 years in the wilderness taking care of his uncle's herds, right? Moses was very familiar with the terrain and everything. And so Moses didn't part the Red Sea. He was just a brilliant military commander who knew that in this season, right now, at this point in time, the Red Sea was so small they could walk across it. Not only does that negate God's power in parting the Red Sea, it also negates God's power in destroying the Egyptians that were following them. But yet, we have people that believe this. The burning bush was just an illusion. There's a plant out there that looks, from a certain angle and things like that, looks like it's on fire, but it's really not. It just looks like it is. It's just an illusion. Science has taken the awesome, amazing miracles and things of the Bible and turn them into less than ordinary events. I mentioned in class this morning the movie Risen and the reaction of the apostles to the miracles. And again, fictional movie. But think about that for a second. Think about those people. How many times did the Pharisees see Jesus perform those miracles? How many times were they present when Jesus performed miracles? When he healed the lame man? When he healed the blind man? When he healed lepers and made them walk? And what was their reaction to that? What was it? Oh, we have been so wrong all these years. We need to turn from what we were doing to this. No. No, instead, they wanted to try and find ways to discount what he was doing. Let's kill him. Well, we can't do that because that'll make the people upset. So let's go about trying to find out why this person who couldn't hear or couldn't see from birth all of a sudden can. Let's bring the parents in here and question them. There's got to be some sort of No, there's no trick. That's the power that he had. That's the power of God that the Pharisees minimized. Yet, what would they tell you? We still worship God. God is our Savior. He's going to send the Messiah to save us. He's here, and you're not paying any attention. What are you worshiping? A true God or a false God? Another reason that we tend to do this, we live in a very informal age. We're not taught to revere God. In fact, what do we see most of the times? We want to take the name of God off our money. We want to take it out of our pledge. We don't want anything to do with the name of God. That's what our society says. Nah, that's not even real. He's not even real. Before, where you might not see it, now it's just plain. We'll make movies about it. We'll have comedy shows about it. We'll do all these things. God's not real. Are we not creating a false image? Are we not doing what he said in those verses? Just because we don't have a graven image, just because there's not something there, doesn't mean that we're not involved in idolatry. We no longer take time to think about God. We're shallow spiritually. We're self-indulgent. We don't take the time to think about God. J.B. Phillips stated the problem this way: your God is too small. Do I worship a small God? In my notes, I had to make sure I was putting capital G and little g, because I wanted to remind myself which kind of God I was talking about. We have one God. There is only one God. And he's the creator. He is the one that was there from the very beginning. Do you understand these verses in Genesis chapter 1? In the beginning, God. He was already there. He is an eternal being. God was already there. Nothing created him. He was there. And when we turn and minimize that power, and we have a wrong concept of what God is and what his will is, we are in essence creating our own God and worshiping an idol. We do this by saying things like, well, God's not going to punish me. We talked about that earlier. He's not going to punish me. In class, I mentioned, I got 90% right. I got 90% right. Some of us think that when judgment day comes, that we're going to be able to plea bargain our way into something else. We'll negotiate with God. He's not going to send me to hell because I got 90% right or 85% right. Did Moses get to go into the promised land? He didn't. You think Moses got 90% right? Sorry, I don't mean to laugh, but it's sometimes when you think about this and the way people think about God and their view and their concept of Him, it's ridiculous. No. In Deuteronomy 3, 23 through 29, Moses is pleading with God to let him enter into the promised land. And God says in verse 26, enough, I'm not talking about this anymore. This is not a negotiation. God will punish us. God will follow through. If we have learned nothing else from the Old Testament, we should have learned that. When the Israelites left Egypt and they wanted to go through other lands and they were not allowed to, God said, we're going to punish them. Not right now, but later. And as we went through those verses and those scriptures and those books, what happened? Those people were punished. God used other kingdoms to punish the Israelites. And when they went too far, He punished them. Because He said, you went too far. I'm going to punish you. If we believe that there is no punishment, if we believe that God's just going to let us off, why are you here? Honestly, why? Oh, you want to worship Him? Are you worshiping the right image? Are we turning this? I could argue that we could turn this table and what we do here into an idol. If we don't understand what it really is, what it means. Those words that Danny used this morning, do we really understand what he said? Jesus was there from the very beginning too. When it says in the beginning God, he meant Jesus was there. He knew all along. Do we understand that? Or do we have this concept that we've created in our minds of who God is and who Jesus is? How do we avoid this? We need to have the right concept of God. We need to understand who He is. One, we need to understand that He exists. So the first thing we need to put out of our minds is that God doesn't exist. Because He does. And we know that without trying to repeat myself over and over. Because in the first sentence of the Bible, it says, He does. In the beginning, God. He was there. He exists. He was not created. He is eternal. He's always there. And He always has been. And He always will be. There's no... eternal doesn't change. It's always that way. God is omnipotent. He's all-powerful. He spoke creation into existence with words. That shelf that hangs in our room was not created by me saying, I want a shelf with two sides, a back, and no. Nope. I had to talk to my dad. We had to sit down. We drew out plans. He showed me how to notch this, showed me how to do that. We had to go to a store and buy the lumber and the nails and all these things put together. We had to draw it out on paper. I had to get approval from the shop teacher that this was an acceptable assignment. I didn't speak anything into existence. but God did, because God is all-powerful. Jesus came to this earth and performed those miracles that he did to prove just that. I am the only one. God is the only one who can do this. That's why he was here, to prove those things. There was no false image. He didn't want a false image. He was showing us concretely, this is what's happening. God is omniscient. He is all-knowing. He knows everything. I don't like that. I'm going to be honest with you. That's probably, of all the ones, these last two, this omniscient and omnipresent, are the two scariest aspects of God's existence that are the scariest. I can live with knowing that he's eternal and he's always there and that he's all-powerful. But he knows everything I do, everything I think, everything I say. That is scary. He knows when I go home what I'm going to turn the TV on and watch. For those of you, it'll probably be Lieutenant Joe Kenda in The Homicide Hunter. That's my thing right now. But he knows that. He also knows anything else that I'm going to do or say before I ever do it. And if I say something wrong or I do something wrong, he's going to let me. Because when he created me, he gave me the free will to do that. But there's a lot of people out there who don't think that's the case. There's a lot of people out there who think that I'm predestined to do certain things. He's all-knowing. I have friends. A friend in, when I was in Morgantown, a friend, and I asked a rhetorical question, all right? Not a question I ever expected an answer from. I said, if you're in an airplane traveling at the speed of sound or whatever, I said, and you, why is it when you're in the airplane and you're traveling that fast, if you jump up in the air, why don't you hit your head on the wing in the back? Because, you know, you jumped up, you're not in the airplane, the airplane should go like, it's a joke, all right? I wasn't looking for an answer. He proceeded to explain it to me for the next 2 hours. And I'm sitting there going, John, it's a rhetorical question. I just wanted you to laugh. That's all I wanted. No. But John, he was one of those people who knew a little bit about everything. And so he proceeded to explain to me why that's not actually the case, you know? Why, if you're in a plane going or a car going at the speed of light, you're not driving over your headlights. No, John, again, rhetorical. Don't need to know. It's supposed to make you laugh. God knows everything. Everything that we do. He's all present everywhere. We had a friend when she was in high school, when she would leave the house, her mom would always say to her, hey, remember, Jesus is in the back seat of that car with you. Why was she saying that? She wanted her to remember, you're going to go out. You're 16 years old. You're going to go out and you're going to be faced with temptations and decisions that you have to make. And you need to remember that he is there with you right now, seeing what you are doing. He knows. He's right there. But how can Jesus be everywhere? How is God everywhere? I want you to think about how many, right now, how many congregations are meeting right now at 11:30 this morning. And that God is present in each one of them. All over the world. We have to understand God's purpose. His purpose. He created us for a reason. Isaiah 43:7 says, "Everyone who is called by my name, whom I created for my glory." God did not create us for our own glory. He created us for His glory. He created us for that. Not for us to glorify the concept of Him that we came up with in our minds. No. He created us to glorify Him by doing His will. He's laid out exactly what He expects from us. In Romans 12, 1 through and 2, tells us that we are to present our bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God. Not holy and acceptable to the concept of God that we created. We have to understand who God is. We have to understand His purpose. We have to understand His will. During our meeting, Andy Cantrell, his last sermon was put to us in the title of the question, "Who is Jesus and what are you doing about it?" Well, who is God to you? Who is God to you? Do you really understand what He's doing? Go back to Romans chapter 1 and verse 18, and let's start back there again and look at these verses again real quick. "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth." If we're not out communicating what God really is, are we not suppressing the truth? Are we not guilty of the same thing, that we're behaving in an ungodly or unrighteous way? Verse 19, "For what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them. For His invisible attributes, namely His eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made." So they are without excuse. We don't need God's miracles. We don't need the miracles of the New Testament to tell us that God exists. Right? They're great to have. They are great to have. But all you really need to do is look out that window at that huge tree. God created that. The grass that grows, the seasons, the rain that falls. God created all of that. He told us so in Genesis 1. We knew from the very beginning, it was plain to us that God is the creator of the world, and we can see it in the things that He made. So at the end of verse 20, it says, "For they are without excuse, for although they knew God, they did not honor Him as God or give thanks to Him, but they became futile in their thinking and their foolish hearts were darkened." They stopped honoring God. Have we stopped honoring God? Where are we in that? They stopped giving thanks to Him. He became futile in their thinking and their foolish hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man, birds, animals, and creeping things. And I want you to notice in verse 24 what God did. He gave them up into their lusts of their hearts to impurity, dishonoring their bodies. Exchanged the truth. Because why? Because they exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Who is God to us? Are we worshiping the true God, or are we worshiping a concept of God, a false concept of God that we have created? And it's a stretch to think about idolatry, because our minds, when we go to idolatry, we think idol. We think a thing, something physical that we can grasp, that we can see with our eyes, that we can touch with our hands. Something that we can place an offering to, whatever it is. But that's not the only kind of idolatry that there is. When we create a false concept of God that we're worshiping, we have done no better than assigning that concept to a graven image. The only difference between the two is we're not carrying around the statue saying, "This is my God." That's the difference. The people in these verses are guilty of the same things that we're guilty of today. The difference is, for the Israelites and those places that they took over, they accepted the graven images, the gods that existed of those people. But were the Pharisees any different then than we are today? They were not worshiping graven images, but they had a false concept of God and who the Messiah was. Their worship was, as God said, and Jesus said, hypocritical. Can we say the same thing about ours? We have to change. We have to go back. I'll rephrase that. I have to go back. And I have to re-examine my life and decide, is the God of the Bible the God that I'm worshiping, or have I created a false concept of Him that I think is right, that I think He's this way, that I believe He's going to do that or behave this way in this manner? People would ask the question, what would Jesus do? That was the bracelet that used to go around. That's not the right question. The right question is, what did Jesus do? You want to learn about God and His will. That's where you learn. Look at the life of Jesus. Look at the prophecies. Look at those things. If there's anything we can do for anyone this morning, we invite you now to come as we stand and sing.
I try.